Your Holiness, to support your noble aspiration and commitment towards interreligious dialogue, the organizing committee has translated into both Russian and Latvian languages your book Toward a True Kinship of Faith, How the World Religions Come Together. Both Latvia and, of course, Russia are multi-confessional, multi-religious communities, and that is why we truly hope that your book will bring more understanding and peace between various religions represented in our both countries. Could I please present these two books to you?
Микрофон чуть-чуть поближе надо, ладно? Потому что...
На 44-й странице читаем текст Праджнапарамиты на русском языке. Все вместе читаем. Открываем 44-ю страницу. Текст сердца Арья Праджнапарамиты.
Please open the text on page 84.
На санскрите Бхагавате Праджнапарамита Хридая. Такую речь я слышал. Однажды Бхагаван пребывал в Раджагире на горе Гридгахуда вместе с великой общиной монахов и великой общиной бодхисаттв. В то время Бхагаван погрузился.
Thus have I heard the Blessed One was staying in Rajgriha together with the great community of monks and the great community of
Исследуя практику глубокой Праджнапарамиты, узрел, что и пять скан пусты от самобытия.
Great community of bodhisattvas, and at the time the Blessed One entered the meditative absorption on the varieties of phenomena called the appearance of the profound. At that time, as well, the noble Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva, the great being, clearly beheld the practice of the profound perfection of wisdom itself and saw that even the five aggregates are empty of intrinsic existence. Thereupon, through the Buddha's inspiration, the Venerable Shariputra spoke to the noble Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva, the great being, and said, how should any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to engage in the practice of the profound perfection wisdom train. When this had been said, the noble holy Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, spoke to the Venerable Shariputra and said, Shariputra, any noble son or daughter of noble daughter of who wishes to engage in the practice of the profound perfection of wisdom should clearly see this way. They should see perfectly that even the five aggregates are empty of intrinsic existence. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Emptiness is not other than form. Form too is not other than emptiness. Likewise, feelings, perceptions, mental form, formations and consciousness are all empty. Therefore, Shariputra, all phenomena are emptiness. There is no. They are without defining characteristic. They are not born. They do not cease. They are not defined. They are not undefiled. They are not defiled. They are not undefiled. They are not deficient. And they are not complete. Therefore, Shariputra, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no perception, no mental formation, and no consciousness. There is no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no form. There is no form, no sound, no smell, no taste, no texture, and no mental object. There is no eye element, and so on, up to, and no mind element, including up to, no element of mental consciousness. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, up to no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Likewise, there is no suffering, origin, cessation, or path. There is no wisdom, no attainment, and even no non-attainment. Therefore, Shariputra, since bodhisattvas have no attainment, they rely on this perfection of wisdom and abide in it, having no obscuration in their minds. They have no fear, and by utterly going beyond error, they reach the end of nirvana. All the Buddhas, too, who abide in the three times, attain the full awakening of unobserved perfect enlightenment by relying on this profound perfection of wisdom. Therefore, one should know that the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unexcelled mantra, the mantra of equal to the unequal, the mantra that quells suffering, is true because it is not deceptive. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is proclaimed. Tadyata gade gade para gade para sangade bodhi swaha. Sariputra, the bodhisattva, the great beings, should train the bodhisattvas, the great beings, should train in the perfect wisdom this way. Thereupon the Blessed One arose from that meditative absorption and commended the holy Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, saying, "This is excellent, 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 O noble child, it is just so. It should be just so. One must practice the profound perfection of wisdom just as you have revealed, for then even the Tathagatas will rejoice." As the Blessed One uttered these words, the Venerable Shariputra, the holy Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, along with the great entire assembly, including the worlds of gods, humans, Asuras, and Gandharvas, all rejoiced and hailed what the Blessed One had said. For the Bodhicitta ceremony, I would like to ask you to turn to page 83, where you find the daily prayers. Under that section, taking refuge, the four immeasurable thoughts, and then seven limbs. So as His Holiness had mentioned yesterday, to go through the seven limbs, perhaps we'll do the seven limb given here, and then the prayer or the verses for generating bodhicitta. With the wish to free all sentient beings, I shall always go for refuge to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate the mind for a full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. I prostrate to the Gautama, who, moved by his compassion, taught us the sublime Dharma to rid us of all distorted views. So today, first, this morning, I will do the ceremony for bodhicitta, aspiring bodhicitta. And for that, so the teaching that we are dealing with is the teaching of the Buddha. And so what is Buddhism about? So Master Nagarjuna, who is known as the second Buddha in this era, in his Mula Madhyamaka Karika, which is like the king of his writings, he says, goes through this praise or verses of salutation, praising the Buddha and saluting the Buddha for teaching the dependent origination, free from the eight extremes, from his own experience. And so with regard to these eight, so with regard to the nature of things, taking birth and ceasing, so with regard to the identity or the nature of things, he taught these two. And then in terms of time, that dependent, whatever is dependent is without permanence and annihilation, these two. And then in terms of objects, there's the going and coming. And then in terms of number, the identity and many. And so with regard to these things, of course, they do exist in conventional terms. But though these do exist in conventional terms, they do not have these natures of birth and ceasing, cessation and so forth. Inherently, which doesn't mean that, I mean, when that they do not exist at all, but they exist by way of, they exist when we do not do any kind of critical analysis into their nature or identity. But when we do critical analysis into the nature of things, how they exist and so forth, then we don't find them. And therefore, it doesn't mean that things do not exist at all. It's not nihilism, as Madhusudan Nagarjuna. Madhusudan Nagarjuna says in the Mulamadhyama Karika that whatever is dependently arisen is said to be empty, and that is also said to be designated, and that is the middle way. So in the sutras, when it says that things have no essential existence of their own, that doesn't mean that they have no existence or at all, but that they exist by way of designation. And so they do not have any independent inherent existence. Therefore, when we talk about emptiness, what that means is that things lack any inherent independent existence, because the way they exist is by way of mere designation and labeling, and therefore they do not have any essential independent existence. And so why do we talk about things having no intrinsic inherent existence? It's because the suffering that we experience has its root in our grasping at some independent true existence in things. And the suffering arises from the karma, which in turn arises through our inappropriate thinking, inappropriate mentation, which in turn is rooted in this grasping at true existence. And therefore, to counter this, it's important to counter this grasping at true existence in order to overcome suffering. And in the 400 verses by Aryadeva, if emptiness means nothingness, then there's no point in giving this teaching. But why do we have suffering? Is because of our negative emotion, disturbing emotions of attachment and anger, which are rooted in this ignorance about the real nature of things, grasping at true existence, independent existence. And therefore, to counter that Buddha taught in the emptiness. And therefore, the Buddha was someone who gave teaching on dependent origination of things from his own personal experience, direct experience. And so, the Buddha was not somebody who was already a Buddha right from the beginning, as we already covered in the Brahmana Vartika. But he became a Buddha, just as it is mentioned in Dignaga's text, where he says that the Buddha was someone who became a reliable person, and therefore he went through the process of transformation by journeying along the path and became such a person. As we already covered also in this text, Brahmana Vartika, that all the negative, disturbing emotions have their antidote, and therefore they cannot persist forever. Just as it is in the case in the external world, when between heat and cold, when the heat rises or increases, the coldness subsides. When the coldness is stronger, then the heat subsides. And so they cannot actually remain and persist At the same time, with equal intensity as such, and then it is also another analogy would be light and darkness. As soon as there is light, the darkness goes away, and therefore, even within the realm of the mind, two states of mind which have this, same apprehended object cannot arise at the same time. And in Mahayana Uttara Tantra, it is mentioned that all sentient beings have this Buddha nature, which is that of the clear light nature of the mind, which is taught in the third turning of the wheel of Dharma, such as the Tathagata Garbha Sutra. In the second turning of the wheel, the Buddha taught emptiness or suchness. And within the third turning, there are different sutras, but the important sutra that is the source text of the Mahayana Uttara Tantra is the Tathagata Garbha Sutra, the essence of the Tathagata. And so, regarding this nature, the clear light nature of the mind, I think I have explained it yesterday. When the emotions, with negative emotions such as attachment, anger, hatred, have their opposing factors, they cannot stay forever. And then these, since they are rooted in this grasping at true existence of things, they cannot, which has its the antidote, that also cannot persist forever. And so, with regard to this clear light nature of the mind, it's not something that arose suddenly by chance, but it's the natural nature of the mind itself. And therefore, in the Mahayana Uttara Tantra, when it says, or the enlightened deeds of the Buddhas radiate, what this means is there comes a Buddha first, and then, for example, in the case of the Buddha, the Shakyamuni, we have the Shakyamuni Buddha, and then there were these great masters, his followers, and through them, the enlightened deeds or the blessings of the Buddhas enter into the mind stream of sentient beings. And therefore, it is said that his enlightened deeds, the Buddha's enlightened deeds, always radiates towards sentient beings. According to Jumipam Rinpoche, because we have the Buddha nature by nature, and it is explained that we have the potential for the four Buddha bodies as well with regard to this line, and the enlightened deeds radiating all the time. And so this is in, comes within the third turning of the wheel of Dharma, the Tathagata Garbha Sutra. So the second turning wheel of the wheel teaches that of the ontological status of things, emptiness. And then the third turning, in the case of this sutra, it teaches that of the subjective mind, the clear light nature, which realizes emptiness. So here in the Sutrayana, there is this teaching of, the Sutrayana teaches the how we use our coarser level of mind to realize emptiness. But in the Tantrayana, as I explained yesterday, we have the subtler mind, state of mind, the clear light nature of the mind, realizing it. And therefore, in the ultimate sense, the emptiness of the mind is the ultimate nature of the mind. And then on the in conventional terms, there is this clear light nature of mind, which is in fact the subtlest of it is taught in the Tantrayana. It is not taught in Sutrayana, and the Buddha taught this to people or beings who were ripened or matured enough for such esoteric teaching. And therefore, in the Tibetan tradition, we have the Chag, the Mahamudra, Dzogchen, and then the union of clarity and emptiness, and then the union of bliss and emptiness, and so forth. All come down to the clear light nature of mind. And so the basic nature of the mind being this awareness and luminosity is not something which actually temporarily arises or happens and then subsides, but this basic clarity or luminosity and awareness nature of the mind always persists. There's no decline in it or going out of existence in it. And so, on the basis of this, it is said that we have the potential for the four Buddha bodies. And so, on the one hand, and we talk about the emptiness of the mind of sentient beings as this, and then on the appearance side, the compounded Buddha bodies at the resultant stage, which comes through causes and causes, within which there are the substantial and the cooperative conditions. And so, with regards to the substantial cause, so the compounded phenomenon within the resultant state of Buddhahood, there is this mention of what is known as the seed of which is the substantial cause as the Buddha nature. So in the sutra, which is called Sutra Taught around the time of death of the Buddha, this is taught. And so with regard to the empty nature of the mind, the emptiness of the mind, the empty nature of the Buddha's mind and the sentient being's mind have the same nature. And so when someone is absorbed in total emptiness, totally in emptiness, I mean that nature becomes like absorbed in the emptiness of all things. So although we have the Buddha nature, we have also the defilements which obstruct us from attaining that or manifesting that. And therefore, we need to use the antidotes to overcome these defilements. And Masanagarjuna says, if you wish to attain the highest enlightenment for yourself and others, the root of that is compassion. And there is the non-dual wisdom and bodhicitta. And so with regard to bodhicitta, the compassion, which is the main factor that gives rise to that of the bodhicitta, here we are talking about compassion with which we take the responsibility of liberating other sentient beings on our shoulders. And so with the help of this, then you generate bodhicitta, and then to become a Buddha, and you also need this to be complemented by the wisdom of emptiness. So for someone who is of a sharper faculty, the way they actually find inspiration in entering or into the teaching of the Buddha is by understanding emptiness. And And so in the case of Abhisamaya Alankara, there is this mention of the such disciples that of with sharp faculty use reason to develop faith in the teaching of the Buddha in terms of the basis, the path, and the result. And therefore, they need to understand emptiness in order to see the reality of things, and also they must be able to see the possibility of reaching Buddhahood by on the basis of understanding emptiness. And so when we talk about as enlightenment, we need to understand emptiness, and through this understanding of emptiness, we must be able to feel convinced about the possibility of enlightenment. So we have this basis or the potential for that Buddhahood, which is the Buddha nature within ourselves. But in order to reach that goal, we need to combine these two principles of bodhicitta and the wisdom of emptiness. So with regard to emptiness, even within the Buddhist philosophical system, there are those who accept selflessness of persons, but not selflessness of phenomena. For example, the Vaibhashikas and Sutrantikas do that, accept that, and not the selflessness of phenomena. The selflessness of phenomena is asserted and explained by the mind-only school and the middle-way school. So even within Madhyamaka, there are these two sub-schools, one which asserts objective existence in things, and the other denying objective existence in things. And so with regard to the later, according to Master Arya Buddha Palita and Chandrakirti following him and Nagarjuna's tradition, this is what they emphasize, that things have no objective existence whatever. And in the Heart Sutra, where it says the form is emptiness, it means that the form does not exist the way that it appears. And then emptiness's form means that the form does not have existence by way of its own inherent nature. Because if that were the case, if it were to have any inherent existence, then the Buddha Palita says that if that is the case, I mean, why do we need to talk about dependence? So if we can pinpoint that this is it, pointing to the form, for example, I mean, what needs say that it is dependent. The mere fact that we say that thing that form is dependent on other factors shows that it has no independent existence. So although it does not have any independent inherent existence or essential self existence, it doesn't mean that the form does not exist, because it has effect on us, and therefore it's by default we can say that it exists by way of designation. And then with regard to the selflessness of persons, of course persons and beings do appear to have some independent objective existence, but that is not how they exist. And therefore, the selflessness of persons, as well as the selflessness of phenomena referring to the psychophysical aggregates, which are the basis of designation of the person. And therefore, on the basis of these two objects, which serve as the basis for establishing emptiness, the beings and the psychophysical aggregates, we have these two selflessnesses of persons and selflessness phenomena. So if we could just meditate on emptiness for a little bit, let us do a meditation on emptiness, as it's said that the emptiness of the mind of sentient beings and emptiness of the mind of Buddhas are no different or of the same nature. Nagarjuna says a person is neither earth nor or water and fire and wind nor or the space and consciousness. What not all these, what is a person or being? So in the case of humans, we talk about, of course, male and female. Even in animal realm, we talk about these things, and then we talk about youth and middle age and elder and older people and so forth on the basis of the change in the body. And so on the basis of the change that happens in the body, and we say we are young or old and middle age and so forth. So a person or a being cannot come to your mind without relating or depending on these psychophysical aggregates. And so with this human gross human body that we have, for example, of course, within the body there is the gross, the coarse, the subtle, and the subtlest. So we will talk about, in relation to this gross body, this gross body that we have is made up of five elements: earth, water, fire, and wind, and space. So through these five elements, our body is made up of these. There are five elements. And so there's the solidity, and then the fluids, the water, solidity for earth, and because of the flow of blood and so forth in the body, there is heat, which represents the fire. And then the movement of these elements is caused by, the motility is caused by the wind. So within the veins, thin and the broad ones, the nerves and veins, they have some hollowness in them. Those because of which the wind energy and the fluidity, the fluids and so forth, can move in them, and therefore this is the space. And so we are not talking about the outer space here, but the inner space within the body. And so if you were to search for the I, yourself, within these or amongst these five constituents factors, you cannot find any of them being yourself. And so I have a scientist friend, a neuroscientist, and he once showed me a diagram of the brain, and said to me that according to those schools which assert some kind of the idea of a soul, it should be somewhere in the middle of the brain or somewhere that can actually command the brain, the different parts of the brain, but you cannot actually see such a commander. And therefore, he said that the Buddhist idea or concept, teaching of soullessness or selflessness is quite relevant. So if the soul were to exist in the brain in our head, where is it? In the different directions, east, west, south, north, parts of the brain. So just look within yourself and search for the eye, where it is, within the body and the mind. You cannot actually pinpoint, within the body, you cannot pinpoint anything being the I or the, yourself. And then you might say, think that, oh, the soul may be in the mind, consciousness. So certain when people search for this self, and they are not able to find within the body itself, they think that since the self must exist as an objective existent, and even though it's not within the body, I mean, they must exist objectively. Therefore, they assert that the self exists within the consciousness. But within consciousness, there are the sensorial consciousness and the mental ones. So within the mental sensorial consciousness, you cannot posit something being the self. But if you were to say that you can actually locate it within the mental consciousness, even within the mental consciousness, there are different states of this mind. And therefore, when your mind is intensely in the virtuous state, I mean, the negative states of mind subside, and when the negative states are stronger, the positive states subside, and therefore you cannot posit the mind or the self as the positive mind or the negative mind. And therefore, the Chittamatras say that it's not these positive and negative states of mind, but something neutral. And therefore, they say there is this alaya vijana, the foundational consciousness or the mind basis of all. And the Madhyamaka, within the Madhyamaka school, there are those of the sub schools within it who say that the instance of a person can be located within the sixth consciousness, the mental consciousness, because that and that even that is not going to be easy to maintain. Because when we talk about consciousness, we also have to take into account its continuity, and therefore the past states of mind have already gone, ceased, and the future states of mind or consciousness yet to arise. And when you, even if you take the present moment of the mind, what you find is the half of that is gone and half yet to arise, and therefore you cannot have something in the middle which is called consciousness apart from these two. And so, just as when we talk about the matter, physical things, we cannot find the things when we search for its identity within it. Similarly, in the mind, as the scientists say that the matter cannot be found objectively, similarly it is the case with the mind, that it cannot be posited to have some objective existence. Because if you assert objective existence within the mind, there'll be logical fallacies that you would have to face, and therefore the self cannot be found anywhere within the body or the mind. And you call me that I'm a Tibetan. The Dalai Lama is neither my body nor my mind, and it's not a third entity separate from these two. The Latvians, you are Latvians here. I mean, which is the Latvian, your body or your mind? You will not be able to find anything that you can pinpoint as being Latvian. And the Russians, too. Is the body, is your body your Russian or your mind Russian? And therefore, apart from the body and the mind, you will not be able to point to a third entity called Russian, and therefore nothing can be found when we search for their identity. So when we do this kind of analysis, we find nothing to point to as being oneself. But we have a sense of I as if it's somewhere here at the center of the heart or somewhere. And therefore, what we see, what we actually understand is that this appears to be the case. But if you actually do this kind of critical analysis that you have done earlier, you cannot find it. And then when you become familiar with that idea, you will find that, oh, this, I don't exist. So I had this feeling when I was searching for the I at one point, I had this kind of a lightning bolt striking through me when I found that I don't exist. And so usually we have this notion of myself, oneself, as being there or here. It's not there. And therefore, the usual perception that we have, or the habit of thinking, the notion that we have of oneself, cannot be held. And therefore, I found that I do not exist. So what this shows is that it does not show that that I do not exist as such, but I do exist. But the way I exist is by way of designation, and therefore, when you think about oneself in this way, you will see that I do exist, but not as an independent, essential, objective existence. And therefore, when you see that I do not exist the way that I appear to myself, the way this I have this notion of a self, then you also are able to reduce this grasping at a self, and then you also are able to help yourself to see others as more important. And so Master Chandrakirti says in Madhyamaka Avatara, entering the middle ways, that when you do analysis through the sevenfold analysis, you will not be able to say that the shape of the body, nor the combination or the collection of these five elements, nor if this self is essentially one with these aggregates or separate, different from the aggregates essentially, and so forth. When you do this kind of analysis, through this kind of analysis, what you find is that the conventional I, the conventional person, exists by way of designation, and therefore, this understanding of how the person or yourself, the I, exists by way of designation, dependence, then you'll be able to actually lead yourself to the understanding of emptiness by understanding that I do not exist independently. So by using this kind of analysis, please try to meditate on emptiness for 1 minute. So when you think in this way critically, you will find that you cannot pinpoint anything as being your the I. And similarly, in the case of the Buddha, Regarding the Buddha, it is the same. In Malamadhivaka Karika, it is said in the 22nd chapter, right in the beginning of that chapter, he is neither the aggregate nor separate from it, neither is he in it, and nor they are in him, the aggregates. And then the Tathagata does not possess the aggregates. What is Tathagata then? And so through this kind of fivefold reasoning of analyzing or checking the self, so whether you use the sevenfold reasoning as given earlier or this particular one, which is with the fivefold reasoning, so you can actually apply this to yourself, thinking that I'm neither the aggregates nor separate from them, neither am I in them nor they are in me. I do not possess these aggregates. Who am I? And so in this way, you will be able to see that I do not exist the way I appear. And in conventional terms, we have the Buddha nature within ourselves, and due to our ignorance, we have all kinds of faults, the disturbing emotions and so forth. And this the ignorance, which is ignorant about or confused about that how the things exist, can be called countered by understanding how things exist. And so the greater your understanding about the nature of the thing grows, increases, this ignorance is reduced. And therefore, we have the potential for attaining the Buddha nature within ourselves, and therefore, with that, we can, if we are able to cultivate bodhicitta through that of the factors of loving kindness and compassion, and also understanding of emptiness, then we will be able to combat all these disturbing emotions and overcome them. And if I mean, through this, you will be able to feel that you're convinced that if I put effort, I have this potential to overcome the negative emotions and also the imprints left by them. And therefore, you attain, and through the purification of these negativities, defilements, you attain that of the Svabhavakaya of a Buddha, that's a purification of the defilements. And so, have that idea of the possibility of attaining such an attainment, such a goal. With the help of this understanding of emptiness, and then on top of that, we need also to develop cherishing others over oneself. So how do we do that? Of course, we all are same in not wanting suffering, but wanting happiness. You are an individual, single person, and others are infinite in number. So, which one is important? The pain and pleasure of oneself, a individual, single person, or the many? So, because of our self-cherishing attitude, wanting happiness for our own self alone, what has been the benefit so far? So, if there's no real benefit in it with selfish attitude, but the more you are concerned about others' well-being, you will have better health, physical health, and more friends. Even when you die, many people will feel dear that they have lost someone like you. If you think only about yourself and bully others, deceive others, lie to them, then you will be left alone. You'll be lonely. And people will say, oh, this don't go there. That person will try to deceive you or bully you. And you cannot be friendly and close with them, to them. And so in such a situation, under such a situation, when you die, people will say that, oh, it's so good that this person died. So even if when in terms of seeking fame and meaning in life and holding others dearer than oneself, cherishing others over oneself, I mean, you will gain both. And when you live selfishly, you will have none, neither. So in the past, of course, today we are following democratic systems of government, but in the past we followed feudal system. So in democracy, the leaders must be trusted by the people. So if the leaders are really people who care of others, concerned about the well-being of others, then they will not be hypocrite, doing something in front and saying something in front and doing something else at the back. You will not do that. And then people will have trust in you, and then you will have more friends. If you are a hypocrite, you try to be cunning, and even dogs, I mean, with that kind of attitude, trying to deceive a dog, I mean, the dog will also sense it. And if you were to try to catch the dog by trying to appease it with some food, it'll sense, and as soon as it gets the food, it'll run away from you. And so all, any sentient being, if you treat them compassionately, lovingly, kindly, then they will also appreciate it. It seems that mosquitoes do not have that sense of appreciation or ability. So sometimes when I know that the mosquitoes that come to my me are not those bringing malaria, I feed them with my blood. I let them suck blood, and then they suck blood. All their whole body becomes red, and then they leave some kind of a leave back some kind of a dropping, a bubble sort of thing, and then fly away. So it seems that they do not have a sense of appreciation. So I don't know if the mosquitoes have this sense of appreciation, or whether you are trying to get rid of it or by blowing it away. So I have actually asked scientists, what size of brain do you have in order to have the sense of appreciation? In Oxford once, when I was having discussions with scientists, there were many professors in the front row. So I asked this in biology and science, so what kind of size of the brain can actually give rise to the sense of appreciation in a being? No one gave answer to that to me. And so of course, mosquito may be a different case. But all other animals, most of the other animals, when you treat them kindly, they also show love to appreciation to you. If you treat them badly, they also have negative response. And so we don't talk about past and future lives. Even in this very life, we have to live in human society. And while living in human society, it would be better to have more friends, isn't it? So if you live alone, as a lonely person, you will never be a happy person. So it's not about, we are not talking about religious matter here, but as a human society, if we have love amongst ourselves to one another, then we will be happier. Without that, even if you may be famous or educated and wealthy and so forth, this will not help. So if a family is loving to the members are loving to one another, even if they may be poor, they will live happily. So it, on the other hand, if a family may be rich, wealthy, and but if they lack one love towards each other, the family members, then they will not live happily. So to live, to have a happy life, here in this life alone, you need to cultivate cherishing others over oneself. And also the benefits that you will reap in the near, in future lives also will come from this attitude of cherishing one others over oneself, and disregarding one's own pleasure. And Master Shantideva says in Bodhisattva Avatara that unless you exchange your joy with the suffering of others, leave alone attaining Buddhahood, even in this existence, this samsaric existence, you will have no happiness. Why that is so? Because it is said again by Shantideva that all happiness in the world comes through cherishing others over oneself and wishing others to be happy, and all suffering come from wishing oneself to be happy. And then, what need is there to say more? Look at the difference between the Buddhas and the sentient beings. What he's saying is that the Buddhas who have dedicated themselves for the benefit of others, and us who have remained selfish. And so, we need to reduce as best as possible, as much as possible, to cherish oneself alone and cherish others over oneself more. And so, if you could do that, put effort in doing that, then Master Jandideva again says, therefore, which intelligent person would feel despair riding the horse of bodhicitta, which leads one from bliss to bliss. And so, the one factor which gives us all happiness and benefit in is this bodhicitta, the altruistic spirit of enlightenment, which holds others dearer than oneself. And so, thinking along these lines, the benefits of bodhicitta, the spirit of enlightenment, you will want to reduce your self-cherishing attitude and increase, strengthen your cherishing attitude of cherishing others. And so you will think that I will benefit others as much as I can, as best as I can, and not be selfish from now on. And at least, if I'm not able to help others and benefit others, I will not harm anyone or hurt anyone. And so, because of our self-cherishing attitude, what has happened so far is how we are not now. That we are full of problems and have not been able to achieve our goals, and therefore leave this self-cherishing attitude and adopt cherishing the attitude of cherishing others. It will have the great benefit, the highest benefit of even the highest benefit of Buddhahood. And therefore, when you will also have this determination through training your mind, that as long as space to make such a determination and prayer, where it says that As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world or beings. And this is similarly in Master Nagarjuna's precious garland, it is said, may I be an enjoyment, object of enjoyment for all sentient beings, just as they wish, like the earth and so forth. And then also in Maitreya's prayer, it is said that the bodhicitta is that factor which leads one away from the lower realms of existence and leads one to the higher realms and then finally to the state of immortality. And through bodhicitta, the higher realms of existence, higher rebirth can be easily attained. And it is, as it is said in the 400 verses, by avoiding, you will be avoid the non-virtuous actions, unwholesome actions. And with the help, within the practice of bodhicitta, you'll be able to do that. And you will also be able to, if you are able to also generate or cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness or on the coarser levels as well as the subtle emptiness. And such a person would be a wise one. So with that, and we are going to go through this ceremony for generating bodhicitta. And so it would be helpful to... Of course, it is always helpful when you think on your own with this kind of about this kind of spirit of enlightenment. But when you imagine great beings, enlightened beings like the Buddha Shakyamuni as a witness, it will be really helpful for you to remind yourself. And so imagine Buddha Shakyamuni surrounded by the eight bodhisattvas. And the seven successors of the Buddha, and then the great Mahasiddhas like Saraha, Virvapa, and Dombipa, and so forth, the 80 Mahasiddhas, in other words, surrounding them, and then the masters of the Nyingma tradition, such as the eight Vidyadharas. And Master Padmasambhava, the great compassionate guru, and Chandrakshita, and so forth. So the masters of the Kama, Therma, and the profound visionary cycle of teachings, and then the Kagyu masters, led by those of the Marpa Lotsau, Marpa Mila Repa, and Dagpol Haji, Gombopa, and then the Kadam masters of the three different lineages of the Kadam Shungpawa, the scholastic tradition, Lamrimpa, and Mengakpa, the pith instruction lineage, and the stages of the path, and then the five patriarchs of Sakya tradition of the who belong to the great beings upholding the Lamde path in the fruit tradition. And within the Sakya, there is a Sakya, Ngorpa, and Sarpa traditions. And then the Geluk tradition led by Master Tsongkhapa and his two chief disciples of Gyaltsabje and Kedubje. Flanking to his right and left, and then within the Geluk tradition, there is this Se lineage, and then the tantric lower and higher tantric lineages, and then we have also many Mongolian ethnics Mongolians here. And so, imagine those great masters of the Mongol, Mongolian masters of the past. So these masters, beginning with the Buddha, down to these masters from Mongolia, are our witness for this generation of bodhicitta. So please turn to page 83 in English. We have the seven limb prayer on page 83 in English. Russian, page 43. So please turn to page 83 for English. So imagine the Buddha with his retinue of the great scholar adepts, masters, as witness, and we do this practice of prostration, making offering, and the confessing our misdeeds, and then rejoicing in the good deeds, and then asking them to turn the wheel of Dharma, and then asking not to pass away, and then doing a dedication. So with this meaning in mind, please say this seven-limb prayer once. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech. Please read together, everyone. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind, and present clouds of every type of offerings, actual and mentally transformed. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the merits of all the holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until samsara ends and turn the wheel of Dharma for sentient beings. I dedicate the merits created by myself and others to the great enlightenment.
Посвящают заслуги свои собственные и других существ достижению великого пробуждения.
So having said that, we have the prayer on generating bodhicitta. And so having done the seven branch practice, now the actual ceremony here is for generating bodhicitta. And so the first verse is about taking refuge to the three jewels, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, until you reach the enlightenment. And so with regard to the taking refuge, there are those of the method of taking refuge and of the beings of smaller faculty, intermediate faculty, and the great scope. And within those of the third way of taking refuge, there are those who take refuge from the point of view of the Sutrayana and those who take refuge according to Tantrayana. And so, in accordance with a person's spiritual development, you have these various ways of taking refuge. And so the method of taking refuge here is that of Sutrayana, which is to say that you take refuge until and for the sake of all beings. And so the Sangha here are those of the Mahayana Sangha, and then the resultant Buddhahood, and also is the Buddha. And then the Dharma refers to You also think of taking refuge with the understanding that you would also be able to attain the state of Dharma Jewel and then becoming a Sangha Jewel and then finally that of a Buddha Jewel. So with that in mind that you wish to attain them, then you take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. Aspiring, because they become the causal refuges and helps you, and they serve as a cause for you to attain those Dharma jewel, Sangha jewel, and Buddha jewel by yourself, and therefore they are causal refuges. The important thing is that you aspire to reach that those goals yourself. Not just leaving it as an admiration level, but actually wishing to reach that goal. And then the next verse says, enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence I generate mindful awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. And so, as I explained earlier, this bodhicitta must be complemented by wisdom realizing emptiness. And so, you should think that all sentient beings across the expanse of the space, I will lead them to the state of Buddhahood by getting rid of their suffering and their causes. And therefore, you make this the determination that you will work to. You will generate this bodhicitta, that you will become a Buddha for the benefit of these sentient beings, because all these sentient beings are same like you, having the Buddha nature within them, and that it is possible that they will be able to attain that of nirvana, which is freedom from, which is a peaceful state, free from all the sufferings. And therefore, I will lead them to that goal of enlightenment. But in order to be able to do so, unless I am able to reach that goal myself, so that I am able to see the mental dispositions of the sentient beings in order to be able to help them effortlessly, and I will determine myself to reach the state of Buddhahood. And therefore, with that purpose in mind, to lead all other sentient beings to the state of Buddhahood, and you aspire to become a Buddha for their sake. And therefore, there are these two aspects or aspirations. One is this aspiration to help others, bringing the others to the state of enlightenment. And then the other one, which this serves as a cause of bodhicitta. And with the bodhicitta, this aspiration to reach that goal of enlightenment, Buddhahood, is concomitant with it. And therefore, the bodhicitta is complemented by these two aspirations. And therefore, make this determination that I will, for the sake of all sentient beings across the expanse of space, reach work to attain Buddhahood. And so, meditate on bodhicitta for some time. And then, after having meditated and cultivated bodhicitta within yourself, you will say these lines, these three verses. And so, please meditate on bodhicitta. So feel compassion, which gives me a sense of sadness, thinking about the suffering of other sentient beings, and think that you will lead other sentient beings out of suffering, and for that you will lead all aspire to Buddhahood yourself, that aspiration to Buddhahood, and that gives joy. So just as you have determined that to reach Buddhahood, for the benefit of other sentient beings, to express that feeling, I mean, recite these verses on page 83, with a wish to free all beings, I shall always go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate the full mind of full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. With a wish to free all sentient beings, I shall always go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate the mind for full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. With a wish to free all sentient beings, I shall always go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate a mind for full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. O sublime precious Bodhicitta, may it arise in those in whom it has not arisen, may it never decline where it has arisen, and but go on increasing further and further.
Я порождаю устремление к полному пробуждению ради блага всех живых существ. Пусть Бодхичитта, драгоценная и величественная, появится там, где она до сих пор не возникла. А где возникла, пусть не увядает, но процветает и возрастает день ото дня. Покуда длится пространство, пока живые живут, пусть в мире и я останусь в страдании рассеивать тьму.
Today, as all necessary asking, as long as space remains, so today my life has borne fruit. I'm born, I've obtained this precious human life and so forth. It's not there in the text. And so we have made this pledge that that we will remain until the end of space to work for sentient beings. So this is a very strong and powerful and stable and firm kind of a determination that we have made by saying as long as space remains. And so with this kind of determination, Master Shantideva says, from then on, even if someone were to be unconscientious, reckless, wherever they go or sit or sleep and move, and this the merit will increase, even some kind of a simulated called bodhicitta, if you meditate, even if you meditate on that, I mean, there will be merit as vast as the space. And so this is the main practice of Dharma in the cultivation of bodhicitta and the wisdom of emptiness. So regarding emptiness, I have meditated on it over 60 years. And I began my meditation first with emptiness, and then with bodhicitta. And so, on a daily basis, I do these two practices mainly, and I do many deity yoga practices, and also do lots of called rituals and prayers and practices for long life. But These two principles of bodhicitta and wisdom of emptiness are main practices without which the other practices will not be so effective. So with the help of these two, your practice becomes very effective and powerful. So I'm telling this from my own experience to you. And so I just explained about meditation on bodhicitta and the wisdom of emptiness and bodhicitta. These two must be the bedrock of your practice. And so with this, then your explanation, I mean, if you do that, then the explanation that I gave makes sense to you. It serves the purpose. And so how many of the lay people here, men and women, wants to take the layperson's vows? Within these layperson's vows, there are many different types of vows also. One of them is taking all the five precepts, which are not killing human beings, and not telling lie, not stealing, and a grave lie. Not telling a grave lie, and then not committing sexual misconduct or non-chastity, and then not taking alcohol. Of course, if you kill others, even if you don't take this kind of precept, I mean, you will land in jail. And then stealing others' possessions also would face legal prosecution. And then raping others must also be avoided, because otherwise you also again face legal prosecution. And with regard to lie, this grave kind of lie, saying something which is human quality, telling that you have high experiences in order to deceive others, being hypocrite, even if you don't have the high qualities of realization and so forth, like clairvoyance and so forth, claiming to have them. So this is not, I mean, the ordinary people like you may not be so prone to this kind of lie, but people who sit on throne like me may be at risk or prone to this kind of grave lie. And then for the lay people, one of the difficult things that you may face is giving up alcohol, vodka. And it would be best if you could pledge not to take any alcohol. But in case you need to take because of your health issue, and you should not still take too much to the point of getting drunk, but just a little bit of alcohol, maybe to quench your thirst. And so these are the five precepts that you need to keep. So please raise your hands if you wish to take these five precepts of a layperson's vow. So it's up to your choice. So then we'll go through this ceremony for the layperson's vows. The best type of layperson's vow is celibacy, layperson with celibacy. Otherwise, there is this next one, which is a layperson with five precepts. Or you can take one of the five precepts, or two, or most of them, or... And so you may take one, two, three, or four, or all five. And so here we are going to do the laypersons with the five precepts. So first, imagine the Buddha in person here, and where you see the image of the Buddha behind me. Please touch your forehead, throat, and heart with his folded hands three times, making prostration to the Buddha. So then, next, so think of taking the five precepts. The reason for that is this true cessation is that attainment whereby through by applying or antidotes, you have seized or could overcome all the negative negativities within your mind. And so in order to be able to overcome all negativities, you need first to engage in restraint of the 10 non-virtuous actions. As the 400 verses I quoted earlier says, so first you should restrain the 10 non-virtuous actions, and then in the middle overcome those of the coarse negative emotions, and then finally those of the even the imprints and the subtle one negative emotions. And so the first step is to restrain the 10 unwholesome actions. So the purpose or your objective for this is reaching that the final enlightenment or liberation. And so with that goal in mind, think of taking the five. So the final goal, final liberation refers to Buddhahood, the liberation within the Buddha. And so in order to reach that, you need to reach the state of arahat, where you would be overcoming, you would have overcome all the disturbing emotions. And in order to be able to reach that kind of level, you need to take the first step, that is restraining the 10 non-virtuous actions. You should not be worried about, oh, if I go against these vows, I would actually face legal prosecution. That's not how you should think. But in order to reach that goal of enlightenment, that you think of, determine that you will keep these five precepts. And since you have already generated bodhicitta, your goal should be to reach the omniscient state of Buddhahood. And with that in purpose in mind, please take the five precepts of the layperson's vows. So please... So we'll use this verse in Sanskrit, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Nama Sanghaya. And so we'll repeat this three times, and at the end of the third repetition, please feel all the lay people and feel convinced that you have received the five precepts of a layperson's vows. The vow with the five precepts of a layperson. Namo Buddhaya. Please repeat. Namo Dhammaya.
Namo Sanghaya.
Namo Sanghaya.
Namo Buddhaya.
Namo Buddhaya.
Namo Dharmaya.
Namo Dhammaya.
Namo Sanghaya.
Namo Sanghaya.
Namo Buddhaya.
Namo Buddhaya. Namo Dhammaya.
Namo Sanghaya.
Namo Sanghaya.
Ta lepshi
So please feel that you have now become an upasaka for males and upasaki for females with the five, or keeping the five precepts. So we'll not go through the precepts, the observance of the precepts, but just think that these great masters, whose pictures, portraits we can see, paintings we can see, have kept the great, all these vows of upasaka, and then the monastic vows, and then bodhisattva vows, and tantric vows, and then these great masters who were upholders of the dharma, just as they have taken this vow and observed and kept them purely, feel determined that you will also, that I will also do, keep and observe these precepts. So with that determination, you do with the pledge to keep the vows. And then I also thought that it would be good to do this because we have already the Buddha and the retinue of masters in our visualization. And there are also the eight bodhisattvas, deities, such as Maitreya, Avalokiteshvara, Manjushri, Vajrapani, Samandabhadra, and so forth. There are eight of these close bodhisattva disciples of the Buddha. So amongst them, you could also imagine Aryatara, Lady Aryatara. So with regard to the qualities of the Buddha, there are those of the wisdom and the compassion and power. These three qualities. So regarding the Creator God, those who believe in Creator God, and they will also they also have this idea of the dear God to have these powers or these qualities of compassion, wisdom, and power. So even in our practices, these all our practices actually are encompassed by these three. So power has nothing to do here with overcoming, I mean, using towards others, but it's not something that comes from others, but that is within yourself to serve others excellently. And so I'll give some transmissions of mantras. Please repeat this mantra of Buddha Shakyamuni. Homage to the Gautama, who moved by his compassion. Om Muni Muni. Please repeat. Maha Munaya Soha. Om Muni Muni. Maha Munaya Soha. Om Muni Muni. Maha Munaya Soha. So this is a mantra of the Shakyamuni Buddha. So since we have a visualized him, imagine rays of light come from his forehead, throat, and heart, and enters you, and dissolves into you, and receive blessings from him. And then, with regard to the blessing of the Buddha, the Tibetan word is chin lap, which means chin in the sense of magnificence or splendor, and lap means transformation. And so through these inspirations of the Buddha, when we are able to transform our own mind, these negative emotions transforming into positive energies, positive thoughts and so forth, is called chin lap. And so we talked about bodhicitta and compassion earlier. And so regarding the compassion, the embodiment of all the compassions of all the Buddhas is Noble Avalokiteshvara. And so by praying to Avalokiteshvara, imagine that rays of light comes from his three places, forehead, throat, and heart, and that this enters you, you dissolving into you, thereby it helps you to increase your experience of compassion to the point of becoming infinite compassion. Please repeat, Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. So this is the mantra of the great compassionate deity, Supreme Deity Avalokiteshvara. And next we'll have the Manjushri mantra. Manjushri is the deity of wisdom. So in reality, the wisdom that we can actually grow within ourselves, the wisdom that judges between what is right and wrong, and this wisdom is the ultimate wisdom, realizing emptiness. And so our infinite compassion is the real definite chandrasik, Avalokiteshvara, and Manjushri is the definitive wisdom. The wisdom realizing emptiness is the definitive Manjushri. And so again, imagine receiving the blessings of the Manjushri and dissolving into you, and repeat this mantra. I pay homage to Manjushri. Omarabazanadi. 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 So this, with this, we are done with the Manjushri mantra. And then the usually we refer to the Vajrapani as the embodiment of the power of the Buddhas, but today we are going to do the mantra of Aryatara, who is the embodiment of the enlightened deeds of the Buddha. And so regarding the Aryatara, she is the transformation of the purification of the wind energy, the prana energy of all the Buddhas. And so with regard to the deeds of the Buddha and moving towards others, Aryatara carries this. Om Tare Tutare Ture Soha. Repeat, please. Om Tare Tutare Ture Soha. Om Tare Tutare Ture Soha. So with this, we have done the generation of aspiring bodhicitta and the Upasaka layperson's vows, and also the transmission of these five different mantras.
Almost 11:30.
Four different mantras, and so it's almost 11:30. We will stop here this session. And so, as I said earlier, your main practice must be the cultivation of bodhicitta and the wisdom realizing emptiness. If you could do go over them, these practices, as best you can, it would be really beneficial. And as time goes by, you'll see changes happening in you in 5 or 10 or 15 years. This transformation will not happen like it's switching a light. It's not automatically, it will not come automatically. But because we're at this stage, while we are full of self-cherishing attitude and also this the ignorance grasping at the true independent existence and things, these two will be changed slowly. through these two practices of bodhicitta and the wisdom of emptiness. And so on a daily basis, please think a lot about these two principles on a daily basis.